Hello, and welcome to the 28th episode of TuneCast, brought to you by the GeekCast Radio Network. I'm your host, TFG1 Mike, and today I am joined once again by Kevin, Professor Boss K. Dog Thompson. Hello.
How's it going?
It's going. How are you?
I am good, and I am ready for some Disney action.
Yes. We're going to be starting the Disney Animation Spotlight with Sleeping Beauty. The Disney Animation Spotlight, the first part of it for TuneCast, will run, I believe it's... Seven, eight episodes. However, it is actually going to be broken up. This episode and the next episode, 29, will be two movies. Episode 30 will be our holiday show. We are only doing one holiday show since this podcast will only last until 2011. So, each year, in 2010, we're going to just basically... refer back to that that holiday episode that was from this year. And I'm going to try to keep that recording very, very just overall, generally Christmas. Not like, oh, what are you doing this year, or, you know, whatever, I don't know. I think we're actually going to have four people on that episode. Directing traffic again. Good Lord. So what have you been up to?
Let's see. The big thing this week was I put up Christmas lights outside. around the roof in the garage and all this nonsense. So I spent a lot of time yesterday doing that, but it's done. I don't have to worry about it anymore. All I got to do is plug it in now. So.
Now, you're not one of those types of people that leaves their damn lights up all year long, are you?
Oh, no, no. It goes up after Thanksgiving and it comes down right after the New Year.
If I had my way, my tree would go up December 23rd, come down December 26th.
Wow. Hey, the Grinch who stole Christmas is not for a couple weeks here.
No, it's not that. It's just... I just never got the whole point. And especially now, I'm a single guy. You know, I don't have a whole lot of family here in Kentucky, you know, outside of my mom. You know, and it's like...
I'm not putting a tree up because I got two cats and I don't think they would let it stand upright.
Well, Steve, our other friend, Steve Megatron from the co-founder with me of GeekCast Radio Network, they have a fake tree, and his male cat likes to jump up in the fake tree and bend the branches.
all I've ever had is a fake tree, but I think mine would bring it down and break all the ornaments, and I don't want to have to deal with it, so... I have no decorations inside, but I got lights outside.
Why is it every time people bring up Christmas trees and cats, I always think of from Christmas Vacation when the cat electrocuted?
Exactly. Cats and Christmas trees don't mix.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, there's not that much going on here. We're just actually in year-end high gear as far as recording and stuff like that. We've got the, as I said before, MWire has the holiday shows coming up. And, of course, we've got our little animation spotlight here with Disney and then the holiday show and then more Disney and then whatever else is down the line. So, we will be right back with Sleeping Beauty.
Joyfully now to our princess we come, bringing gifts and offered wishes to reflect our loyalty anew. Hail Aurora! Hail Aurora!
Sleeping Beauty, sparkling with colorful spectacle. Brimming with gay music and delightful new songs. Filled with fascinating new Disney characters.
I wonder.
You'll meet lovely Princess Briar Rose.
I wonder why each little bird has a someone to sing to.
Hot boy! You'll meet handsome Prince Philip. And Samson, his noble steed. Oh! You'll meet meet the most delightful fairies who ever wafted a magic wand. Flora.
Follow me.
Fauna. And Merryweather. You'll share the fun with King Stefan and King Hubert. And you'll see Maleficent work her wondrous witchcraft.
Stand back, you fools!
The fine art of animation becomes magnificent entertainment as Walt Disney brings one of the world's favorite stories to the screen. It's filled with magical fun. It's spectacular in its beauty. And there's adventure to excite every emotion.
No, it cannot be!
The management of this theater is proud to recommend this magnificent motion picture to every member of every family everywhere.
We are back, and it is time for the history lesson. Take it away, Professor.
All right. For today's history lesson, we're traveling back in time to 1959. 1959 was the year where Sleeping Beauty was produced by Walt Disney, obviously based on the fairy tale. Here goes my French here. I believe it's French. La Belle Boy Dormant by Charles Perrault. It was released to theaters on January 29th, 1959 by Buena Vista Distribution, and it is number 16 for animated features by Walt Disney in the animated classic series. It was also the last fairy tale produced by Walt Disney. After his death, the studio went back to fairy tales in 1989 with kind of the rebirth of Disney, in my opinion, when they started with The Little Mermaid. So, big break between the Sleeping Beauty and Little Mermaid films as far as fairy tale Disney movies. The film was based on the fairy tale, like I said, and the musical score and song featuring the work of the Berlin Symphony Orchestra are arrangements for adaptations of numbers from 1890 Sleeping Beauty Ballet by Tchaikovsky. The Sleeping Beauty was the first animated feature to be photographed in the Technorama widescreen process, and the film was presented in Super Technorama 70 and 6-channel stereophonic sound in first-run engagement. Only one other animated film, which is The Black Cauldron, was shot in Technorama. All right, that does it for the history lesson. Let's move on to the rest of the show.
You actually forgot something there.
I was going to bring that up later when we talked about your character.
Okay, all right. Moving on to the general memories. I mean, yeah, we are starting a spotlight on Disney animation, but honestly, I never knew these films were as old as they are. Same thing with, like, the Jetsons and the Flintstones. I always thought because the Flintstones was in syndication in the 80s that it was actually, you know, new episodes in the 80s when, in fact, it wasn't. Jetsons was. They did produce new episodes for that in the 80s, but, you know, these are the same thing. You know, when I was younger, Disney mania was everywhere. Back in the 80s,
I think Disney did a really good job of keeping enough stuff consistent. And when I mean stuff, I mean like graphics, logos, like intro, you know, that type of stuff. Where if you're a kid and you're watching this stuff, especially since when you're a kid, your parents are probably showing you every Disney movie in the world to try to keep you occupied or whatever. But you just assume that they're all from the exact same time period. Mm. Now, did they look old? Maybe they did, but as a kid, for some reason you didn't Like, most kids, if they see something old, like if they see something in black and white, they're going to completely shut off to it. But for some reason, the Disney stuff does not have that effect on anybody that I know.
There's only one thing that I disagree with that, and there's only one black and white instance that I would disagree with you on that. And that is, of course, the Three Stooges.
Yeah, but I mean, there's so much stuff that if it's in black and white or for whatever, kids will just be like, no, can't watch it, blah, blah, it's old, it's from forever ago. But I never can remember one time watching a Disney movie and being like, this is too old.
Yeah,
it just didn't happen.
Neither, yeah. I can't either.
But I gotta say that even though this one's called Sleeping Beauty, which completely makes it sound like a, I don't know how you want to say it, but like a girl Disney movie. Mm-hmm. You know, you have your titles that just shout that this is more for a girl audience. Snow White, Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, that type of stuff. But out of all those, this is the most maybe fun for a guy out of all those movies, I think. Because you have so many guy elements in here that would just like, you know, you have the dragon, you have the, you know, all the obstacles and you know, the conflicts going on. I think the title of this one's very misleading.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. You know, you do have the Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
You know, of course. Of course, you know, the whole hero complex with the prince having to save her and everything else, and you have, I actually almost equate this to, not really count as part of it, but a type of Arthurian legend, where it has nothing to do with King Arthur or the Knights of the Round Table or Camelot, but it's a medieval movie is what it is. And actually, today when I was, well, by the time this airs, 1 week from when we're actually recording, I don't know, I think it's December 9th is when this is supposed to air. I don't remember, hell.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Anyway, I actually watched this today with the commentary with, Leonard Maltin and two other guys. I forget what their names are. I've got the DVD right here. Let me see. Oh, no. Sure. Yeah, shut up.
Computer, but I can still make the Jeopardy sound.
Yeah. It doesn't say who the. I know it's Leonard Maltin, the Entertainment Tonight movie guy, and two other people that were associated with Disney. And it's very interesting when they say that I believe Snow White was the first ever Disney animated feature, and then Cinderella was after.
Right.
Cinderella was basically before Sleeping Beauty, and they wanted, with this film, what they said in the commentary was that Walt Disney wanted completely different.
It's like the polar opposite of Cinderella.
Yeah.
I mean, Cinderella is what you think it is. It's got that name, and you think, this is going to be a movie that's all about, you know, the things that girls like to watch. It's going to be about, you know, what is traditional girl type stuff, like, you know, clothes and that type of work and all that, you know, the big love story and all this type of stuff. And that's exactly what Cinderella is. But then you hear Sleeping Beauty, and I think a lot of people just think, oh, it's the same type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's complete opposite.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's one reason why I tend to like Sleeping Beauty even more maybe than I like Cinderella. And I don't know if I'd say I like it more than Snow White, but I don't know. There's a lot of parts that I think talk to a guy more in Sleeping Beauty than they do in either of those other two.
Well, like I said, you know, all right, you know, and we're going to get to Cinderella eventually on Tooncast because we're going to have two volumes of the Disney Animation Spotlight. I just have to actually get the DVD. It's one of the ones I don't have. Comparing the two films between Cinderella and Sleeping Beauty, Cinderella, you have a prince who is hunting for his missing one-night stand type of... Even though, okay, I know that sounds bad, but come on, this is Disney. They had a dick for a Little Mermaid tower on a VHS case or whatever. You know, I mean... I know that sounds bad, but in Sleeping
Disney's
Beauty.
Famous for it.
What?
The Disney's famous for their Freudian slips. We'll call it.
You know, Freudian slips. Yeah, that's what they are. Anyway, fucking Jeffrey Katzenberg. Anyway, all right.
Stanley,
who is looking for his one night stand or his one night party guest or whatever the hell you want to call her. In Sleeping Beauty, you have someone who falls in love with somebody at first sight, who is a prince. You could almost call him a knight as well. I mean, hell, he rides a horse called fucking Samson, for Christ's sake. You know, so he's actually going to try to save this person, so it's more of a hero knightly film, whereas Cinderella, he's just stalking her.
Right.
we'll get to that eventually, way down the line as far as Cinderella goes, but just watching with the commentary, in certain parts they would, I hate to say this, but they would shut up and let the audio play through. Even then, I could still understand what was going on, and I had actually watched it about a week ago. Well, again, by the time this airs, it would be 2 weeks ago. Just watched the film by itself, and yeah, I think it's one of Disney's best films, if not the best fairy tale film that they did. I
would agree with that, except I would put a qualifier on it, because as much as I'm a fan of the original stuff and, you know, all that type of stuff, I think it's the best of its era. Mm-hmm. I would say it's one of the number one, it was the number one fairy tale movie out of its era, but I'm biased. I don't think any of the originals can compare to the 90s Disney movies. That's just me.
Well, you know, alright, well, it's timeless, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just biased, I guess. I think Aladdin, Lion King, and Little Mermaid are the probably the three best Disney movies ever.
And that's fine. I mean, I don't disagree with you. I think that they are very good Disney films. And, you know, once we get to those, we can elaborate on that. But
I think out of the originals, this is the best.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, and you really can't compare Sleeping Beauty to anything other than Snow White and Cinderella.
Right.
Obviously, because
you can't compare it to the Jungle Book and that stuff, and you can't compare it to the 90s stuff. It's just,
yeah,
Disney has its different eras, and
yeah,
and you got to stay within that era if you're going to talk Disney films.
So I guess moving into the characters in the cast, you had Princess Aurora, also known as Briar Rose, voiced by Mary Costa. Mary Costa actually did both the according to the commentary track, she did both the talking voice and singing voice. Apparently, she was going to school or learning to be an opera singer, and she eventually did go through with that, is what Leonard Maltin said on the commentary.
You know what I just realized? That, you know, doing this Disney spotlight, which we'll be doing, obviously, like you said, for these next two episodes, and then, you know, 5 or 6 episodes after the Christmas special, it's going to be one of the first times during Tooncast where we're not going to be familiar with all the voice casts.
I know it.
Because obviously most of them are coming from 1950s and stuff like that, where it's like the first time where it's not, you know, there's no Chuck McNeil, there's no, you know, Frank Welker, so it's an interesting voice cast. I'm going to be unfamiliar with most of the Disney ones.
Yeah, but I mean, even though, you know, even that being said, it doesn't really, I don't know how to say this gently. I'm not trying to, you know, stick a hole in, I'm not trying to poke a stick into a hole here, but honestly, I didn't really care about who voiced who in the Disney films. Of course, the later films, like Oliver and Company, I mean, come on, you got Huey Lewis, you got Billy Joel, Bette Midler, you know, a lot of those, you know, late 80s, early 90s, you know, musical stars.
I
huh?
I agree with you. I don't think I ever thought about who's behind the character or who's doing the voices in a Disney film until, I don't think I even thought about it until Aladdin. Yeah. I think that was the first time where I was like actually conscious of, you know, I know the people that are doing these voices, or, you know, I recognize the voices, which is a testament, I think, to the voice actors that did Disney films, because it didn't matter who it was, they just did their job and they did a good job.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and as I said a second ago, for me it was Oliver and Company, because you have all of these big name, you know, 80s, you know, 80s music stars, you know, Huey Lewis, like I said, Huey Lewis, Billy Joel, Bette Midler, a bunch of people. I mean, I don't remember it off the top of my head at this point. Of course, we'll get to that once we get to it. But, you know, that was for me when I started recognizing voice actors in Disney films. And the earlier films, like this one and Snow White and Cinderella, I just, that, you know, okay, that's the female voice for Cinderella. Cool. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, although I would like to mention that the voice director for this was Andrea Romano. No, I'm just kidding.
Shut up. yeah, actually, it's funny. One of our upcoming one of our episodes upcoming in the 30s for Tooncast, the GoBots episode, she was the voice director on that.
Love it. I'm actually looking forward to that episode. I will say that the one voice actor that I do recognize on this list right off the bat, I'm not saying that these other voice actors aren't famous and aren't well known for what they did. I'm just saying that I'm not familiar with them, but the one I am familiar with is the Owl. The Alice McKinnon has done a whole lot of stuff. I mean, some of these other people might have done a whole lot of stuff too, but I wish I could think of which roles I'm familiar with of Dallas McKinnon. I'm not 100% sure which ones they are, but I've seen his name a lot of different places.
If you listen, now did you watch the film before we recorded this?
I haven't watched it recently. I mean, I watched it a ton in previous years, but I haven't watched it recently. I don't own it. I'm sorry.
He can't even live up to his recording abilities, folks. He drops the ball on the scripts. He loses his internet connection. Then he watches fucking movies.
hey, who spent 20 minutes searching through my TV guide so I could record all the Christmas shows beforehand?
That's not till the Christmas episode.
Actually, what I plan on doing is in a couple of days I'm going back home for a little bit. And I think I'm going to raid, luckily I don't think my sister ever listens to this because she's in Australia right now, but I'm going to raid my sister's room because I believe she has just about every Disney movie on either VHS or DVD, so I will be set for the Disney spotlight in 2 days.
Good.
Dallas McKinnon.
No. Well, yeah, but no. you remember the voice of Maleficent, right? You remember hearing that voice?
Mm-hmm.
That is the stepmother from Cinderella.
Okay. That makes sense.
And when I was doing the research in a lot of the Disney films, I found out that Disney reused a lot of animation.
Oh, yeah.
And I know this is kind of, I mean, we're kind of pretty much breaking off into the behind-the-scenes segment now, but Disney films back in the 50s and the 60s, you know, before the 80s and stuff, I would assume, like a lot of the films, Alice in Wonderland, Robin Hood, Sleeping Beauty, Cinderella, a lot of the animation is reused. And a lot of characters cross over.
Yeah, and a lot of times ideas that didn't work in other movies reappear in future movies or stuff like that. We'll get more into that, I think, a little bit later in this actual episode.
Yes.
But I got a question for you real quick then. One last thing about the characters, since we're looking over the list of characters and actors and stuff like that, do you have a favorite, least favorite character in this movie? Didn't mean to put you on the spot there.
Well, no, it's not really putting me on the spot. I like a couple of characters, but I really don't have an overall favorite. think that Maleficent is the, to this point, outside of the Queen from Snow White, she is the scariest Disney villain. Just at this point of when Disney was making their movies, you know, I mean, Christ, she turns into a giant fucking dragon, for Christ's sake. You know. and of course, I like Prince Philip because he's standing up to his father for what he, you know, he believes he's in love with this girl, but of course the king doesn't, you know, his father, I forget King Hubert was Philip's father. Doesn't realize that the girl he fell in love with was Stefan's daughter. I did like King Stefan. I like the two of them playing off of each other in that scene where the jester gets drunk when they're arguing about who's marrying who and where the wedding's going to be. The two kings are arguing amongst themselves. And in the background, the court jester is getting drunk out of his ukulele or whatever he's got.
I think my favorite, which is odd for me to choose a character like this, but I think my favorite, even though she's not present for most of it, is Princess Aurora. The reason I say that is because if you're just going on where Disney is at this point, and if you're watching Disney movies in chronological order, like we've mentioned before, you've seen Snow White and you've seen Cinderella. And not that I didn't like those two characters, but as the lead female in those two characters, they just didn't capture me to a point. I don't know if it was, you know, as a kid, it's not like you're not attracted to them or stuff like that, but I just didn't care for Snow White as, you know, the lead female so much.
Next episode.
Cinderella that I didn't care about either, but in Sleeping Beauty, this was finally a leading lady in a Disney movie that I actually, like, had interest in, if that makes sense.
One of the other things that was said on the commentary track for this, because I have the 50th anniversary 2-disc Platinum Edition that came out, I believe it was the end of last year, 2008, or middle of last year. This is actually the first time I've ever actually owned Sleeping Beauty on DVD. Where the hell was I going with this? On the commentary track, they actually are commenting about how beautiful the animation on her is, how beautiful her character design is, and they, the commentators, actually thought that she was probably, at the time of those, of these films that were taking place back before the, before we were born, that she was the most beautiful out of the three of them.
I agree. And I mean, I know people always say, you know, Snow White's all, you know, Snow White's this image of perfection and beauty and stuff like that. I'll take my Princess Aurora over Snow White any day.
we should also mention that it's actually very funny. Princess Aurora, the film's main character, appears fewer than 18 minutes in the entire film, excluding the time she appears as an infant in the beginning.
It's just an amazing, amazing statistic.
Yeah, exactly.
Go Disney, name a movie, Sleeping Beauty, have the entire movie be about Cohen, and then put them in 15 minutes of footage.
One thing, I understand they had to change the name of the character when she went into hiding, because they are actually the fairies are hiding her own identity from her. But I didn't like that. I didn't like the whole Briar Rose thing and blah blah blah. You know, you have three names for one friggin' character. That's like, you know, giving your kid two middle names. It's like Michael Allen Joseph Blanchard. It's like, crap. You're going to curse the kid with four fucking names?
God. You never had to curse her because she was such a sweet girl.
Well, all right. You get what I'm saying, though.
I do. Yes, I do.
Yes. Do we have any other thoughts in the voice cast?
No, I mean, I don't have a least favorite character. I like basically all the characters, and I think they each had qualities that you could like about, even if they were, because it was scary, like the, you know, like Maleficent.
On the Green Fairy, I didn't dislike her, but she just didn't have that much to do. I mean, whereas Flora and Meriwether were always fighting with each other, red, blue, red, blue, red, blue. Flana, she basically had nothing to do outside of...
Yeah. Luckily, she was part of that trio, so you can kind of deal with having one that's kind of a nobody.
Yeah, true. So going into the behind-the-scenes segment, as far as the some notes on the overview and the art direction, Sleeping Beauty spent nearly the entire decade of the 1950s in production. The story work began in 1951, voices were recorded in 1952, animation production took from 1953 until 1958. The stereophonic musical score, partially based on... Oh, crap, I can't pronounce his damn name. Tchaikovsky's ballet of the same name was recorded in 1957. The film holds a notable position in Disney animation as the last Disney feature to use hand-inked cells, beginning with the next feature, 101 Dalmatians. Disney would move to the use of
xerography.
Xerography. It's basically photocopies.
Yeah.
To transfer animated drawings from paper to celluloid. Its art, which Walt Disney wanted to look like a living illustration which was inspired by medieval art, was not the typical Disney style because Disney Studio had already made two features based on fairy tales, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs and Cinderella. Walt Disney wanted this film to stand out from its predecessors by choosing a different visual style. The movie eschewed the soft, rounded look of earlier Disney features for a more stylized one. Since Super Technorama 70 was used, it also meant the backgrounds could contain more detailed and complex artwork than ever used in an animated movie before. That's one thing I do have to bring up. The backgrounds on this movie,
mm-hmm.
and just the details in the backgrounds.
Yeah.
Just amazing.
Yeah, it says that the guy who painted them usually took 7 to 10 days to paint,
mm-hmm.
in contrast with it usually only taking about one work day. So, I mean, he's spending 7 to 10 times the amount of time on these things, and you can tell.
Right. Of interesting note is the fact that Chuck Jones, who gained fame as an animation director with Warner Brothers Animation, did some work on the film. He worked with the studio during a brief period when Warner Brothers closed its animation department and anticipating that 3D film would replace animation as a box office draw. When the studio was reopened following the failure of 3D, Jones ended his work at Disney and returned to Warner Brothers. His work on Sleeping Beauty, which he spent 4 months on, remained uncredited. Ironically, during his early years at Warner Brothers, Jones was a heavy user of Disney-style animation. And again, you know, Disney was the first to do animation. I honestly don't think anyone can argue that point with me. Disney was the first. Hell, Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies is not really a direct copy, but it's based off of Disney's Silly Symphonies.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, that's just like, you know, people nowadays copying off of stuff that came out in the 80s. It's the same thing. But,
right.
You know...
I mean, Warner Brothers did their thing, and, you know, they obviously became very good at certain aspects of doing, you know, certain things, but it all started with it. So you gotta understand that.
Right.
So, a couple other things I was noticing here, which is what we were kind of talking about earlier on, is that several story points for this film came from discarded ideas for Disney's previous fairy tale involving a sleeping hero and obviously Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. You know, including Maleficent's capture of the prince, as well as her mocking him, and the prince's daring escape from her castle. Disney discarded these ideas from Snow White because his artists, get this, were not able to draw a human male believably enough at the time. So all they would, you know, they show up in the comic book version of Snow White, but they didn't really make it into a film until Sleeping Beauty. So it's kind of interesting, some of the stuff that, you know, might have been planned in other movies before this, but didn't really come to fruition until Sleeping Beauty.
Yep. As far as the live-action reference footage, before animation production began, every shot in the film was done in live-action reference version, with live actors and costumes serving as models for the animators. The role of Prince Philip was modeled by Ed Kemmer, who had played Commander Buzz Corey on television's Space Patrol 5 years before Sleeping Beauty was released. For the final battle sequence, Kemmer was photographed on a wooden buck. Among the actresses who performed in reference footage for this film were Spring Bigoton, Frances Beaver, and Helene Stanley. Helene Stanley was the live-action reference for Princess Aurora. The only known surviving footage of Stanley as Aurora's live-action reference is a clip from the television program Disneyland, which consists of the artist sketching her dancing with the woodland animals. It was not the first or last time Stanley worked for Disney. She also provided live-action references for Cinderella and Anita from 101 Dalmatians, and portrayed Polly Crockett for the TV series Davy Crockett, King of the Wild Frontier. An episode of the Mickey Mouse Club television series features Stanley reenacting scenes from The Sleeping Beauty for the Mouseketeers to watch. A clip from this episode is included in a special feature on the Cinderella Platinum Edition DVD. Huh, that's cool. I gotta find that, actually.
Yeah.
Cinderella.
It's basically, I think that's kind of interesting that they did that. I didn't realize that they had done that type of stuff for some of the, for, you know, this early Disney movies. But I think it's cool to use these live actors as a model for the animators and the drawers to try to get it as close as possible. So I think that's very cool that they did that, to make it as close to live action as possible.
Yes, very much so. So I guess we can move on to the actual plot of the film. Why don't you try to summarize this without...
Okay. I am not going to read you the entire plot, so you should thank me later.
The best way we can summarize this is that Princess is born, evil sorceress cast a spell on her, fairies try to save her, Prince finds her in the forest, falls in love with her, you know...
Fairies screw up and you know, let people know where she's at.
Yeah.
So she gets lured into obviously the tower and the spinning wheel, which is going to fulfill the curse made in the beginning of the whole film. She, you know, goes into her, luckily, deep sleep instead of death because of the fairy's magical powers. And basically then it's just a issue for the rest of the movie of trying to get the prince to her to kiss her so that she can wake up.
Yes. I did like a lot of the prince scenes. I like how they animated in the courtyard when the king is coming out to meet him. And as the king is walking, he's basically hobbling along and his stomach is doing more walking than his feet are. Because that old king. I'm a fat guy myself, but I just found that very funny, the way that they animated that character to basically his stomach is doing the walking for him, even though his feet are, like, you know, hopping up and down.
I gotta say that since we're talking about basically the overall movie and the plot and stuff like that, that I think one of the most memorable Disney scenes of all time for me, and this is saying a lot because I'm not necessarily, as much as I've been saying Sleeping Beauty is a great film, it was great for that time. It probably wouldn't rank in my top five for Disney films all time, but I think it does have one of the most memorable scenes of all time for a Disney film, and that's the spinning wheel scene. That scene, I don't know what the right word is for it. It didn't gross me out necessarily. It didn't freak me out, but it bothered me so much. Like, it was just such a great scene, but as a kid, you were just, I don't know, I'm not one that likes needles anyway, so just the fact of her, you know, pricking her finger on the spinning wheel just stuck with me. And, like, that scene, I can just picture in my head at will if I wanted to, and there's not a lot of, you know, you can't say that about every scene of a movie that you see, especially when you've seen 1,000 Disney movies, but that scene just sticks with me.
And I think the reason why it probably sticks with you is because of the way that the way that that scene is lit. I mean, come on. It's eerie green lighting. I mean, that's like Halloween-type scary shit right there.
And I think most kids don't like needles.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, most kids don't like needles. They don't like the idea of getting pricked. They don't like the idea of, you know, seeing the blood from it or anything like that. So this whole thing that this is how she's going to get, you know, this is how she's going to, you know, be thrown off of course, and that, you know, it's just like, I'd rather, you know, Snow White, you don't have that. You bit into an apple. No kid is afraid of apples. Like, you know, it doesn't bother you as much, but the fact that she's going to get pricked in her finger just shows me. It's like chalk, you know, like nails on a chalkboard or something.
Mm-hmm. I do want to read the last paragraph of the plot synopsis. After a long fight in which his shield is destroyed, Philip throws the sword, blessed by the fairy's magic, into the dragon's heart, causing Maleficent to fall to her death from a cliff, leaving nothing but a dark stain and turning the sword black. Philip climbs to Aurora's chamber and removes the curse with a kiss. As the film ends, the prince and princess both happily learn that their betrothed and their beloved are one and the same. They arrive at the ballroom, where Aurora is happily reunited with her parents, and she and Prince Philip dance a waltz. They do not notice, as they dance, Meriwether and Flora have resumed their disagreement over the color of her dress and continue to change it from blue to pink with their magic. As the book closes, Aurora's gown continues to change colors. One of the greatest things about these older Disney films is the fairy tale storybook type opening and closing.
Yeah.
Really enjoy that.
Oh, and I guess we kind of, when we were doing that 2-second synopsis of the entire movie, we left one thing out, so I'll mention it real quick, just, which I shouldn't have to, because if anybody hasn't seen this movie, I don't know what has happened in your life.
You know, it's like, if he needs a spoiler alert for a movie that was made in 1959, living under a
right.
rock.
But we forgot to mention at the beginning of the film that the prince and princess are basically their marriage is arranged at the beginning. They're basically promised to each other, and that when he falls in love with the Briar Rose, he doesn't realize obviously that that's the princess. So he does not want to marry the princess because he wants to marry Briar Rose instead. And it's kind of a whole theme throughout the movie of him not realizing that, or she realizing that, you know, they're one and the same. So that was kind of better.
It's kind of like the whole Clark Kent Superman thing without the glasses, really.
Exactly.
Going through some of the... I'm not going to read all this trivia. It's just...
No.
I'm
not going to read any of it because I don't have it.
So actually we could technically really skip all the damn trivia, but a flamethrower was used to create the dragon breath sound effect for the climax of the movie. Castanets were used for the sound of its snapping jaws. Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
The elaborate background paintings usually took 7 to 10 days to paint. By contrast, typical animation background takes 1 workday to complete. Second only to Dumbo in 1941, who didn't speak at all, this Disney title character has very few lines of actual dialogue throughout the entire film, which is actually about the three fairies who protect her, not about the Sleeping Beauty herself. Rose Aurora is only featured in the film, very few scenes, and hardly ever says anything. She doesn't utter a single word in the second half of the film, neither before or after she falls under the spell. Her first line comes 19 minutes into the film, and her last line comes 39 minutes into the film. However, she does sing 2 songs during that time.
That makes it all better.
The Disneyland Castle was named for this film, even though the park opened 4 years prior to the film's release. The hell's name that damn castle?
I don't even know.
It's not Magic. I know Magic Kingdom is the Disney World. I don't know. The little-known second half of the original Sleeping Beauty fable involves the prince's attempts to protect Sleeping Beauty and their children from his mother, who is an ogress. In the end, of course, she is thwarted and jumps into a pot of live serpents to avoid being killed by her own son.
That would have been awesome.
I don't think I ever want to read that. I don't think
I'll see that in a future movie. That's a part left out of that one that they'll incorporate into a future movie.
Let's see. You already mentioned that. After she is told that she is betrothed, Princess Aurora has no lines whatsoever.
So bizarre.
In the original fable, Princess Aurora is the result of a spell cast on the queen by a magical fish that she had thrown back into a pond after it wound up laying on the bank. Can you say Shrek, anybody?
That's awful.
And I honestly don't know. I'm not going to read any of the continuity goofs because it. You're supposed to enjoy the film. I mean, you know, I understand we're reviewing it here, but, you know, Tooncast is more about remembering it than actually dissecting the damn thing. Let's see here. Plot holes. The spinning wheel that put Aurora to sleep was not real, but the shadow of one. Technically, because of that, she shouldn't have activated the curse due to false properties. It's kind of weird. And again, as we said before, the entire musical score was done by the, what the hell is the damn thing?
Berlin?
Yeah, the Berlin Symphony Orchestra. Much of the music score also is based on I can't say his damn name. Tchaikovsky's ballet Sleeping Beauty. So going into the legacy segment here, for the theatrical release, Disney's distribution arm Buena Vista Distribution originally released Sleeping Beauty to theaters in both standard 35mm prints and large format 70mm prints. The Super Technorama 70 prints were equipped with 6-track stereophonic sound. Some CinemaScope compatible 35mm Technorama prints were released in 4-track stereo, and others had monaural soundtracks. On the initial run, Sleeping Beauty was paired with the short musical documentary film Grand Canyon, which won an Academy Award. During its original release in 1959, Sleeping Beauty earned approximately $48 million, making it second only to Ben-Hur, and costing an enormous budget of $6 million.
Despite the financial success, it was met with mixed reviews from the critics. Often citing the film being slowly paced and having little character development. Nevertheless, the film has sustained a strong following, obviously, and is today hailed as one of the best animated features ever made, thanks to the painting and its music score and its stereophonic sound presentation. Yes. And there's no shortage of releases for this one. Not only did we have the 1959 re-released theatrically in 1970, 1979, 1986, 1993, 1995, and 1998.
Not wrong. It had.
I'm sorry, 2008.
In 2008, when adjusted for ticket price inflation, the domestic total gross comes out to $478.22 million, placing it on the top 30 of adjusted films. As far as the home video releases, Sleeping Beauty was released on both VHS, Betamax, and Laserdisc in 1986. In the Classics Collection, becoming the first Disney Classics video to be digitally processed in hi-fi stereo. The film underwent a digital restoration in 1997, and that version was released to both VHS and Laserdisc, again as part of the Masterpiece Collection. The 1997 VHS edition also came with a special commemorative booklet, included with brief facts on the making of the movie. In 2003, the restored Sleeping Beauty was released to DVD in a 2-disc special edition. Now, all right, people need to pay attention when they're listening to these releases for DVD. The 2003 version is the 2-disc special edition, which included both a widescreen version formatted at 2.35 :1 and pan and scan version as well. A 50th anniversary platinum edition release of Sleeping Beauty as a 2-disc DVD and Blu-ray disc was released October 7, 2008 in the U.S., making Sleeping Beauty the first entry in the Platinum Edition line to be released in high-definition video. This release is based upon a new 2007 restoration of Sleeping Beauty from the original Technicolor negatives, intra-positives, several generations removed from the original negative were used for other home video releases. The new restoration features the film in its full negative aspect ratio of 2.55, wider than both prints shown at the film's original limited Technorama engagements. Let's see, where is the Blu-ray set features BD Live, an online feature, and extras include a virtual castle, multiplayer games. The Blu-ray release also includes disc 1 of the DVD version of the film. In addition to the two Blu-ray discs, the DVD was released on October 27, 2008 in the UK. The Blu-ray release is the first ever released on the Blu-ray format of any Disney DVD feature produced by Walt Disney himself. Sorry about that ding. I got a notification from my wireless mouse saying that the batteries are low.
And obviously you can see Cinderella everywhere. She has basically filtered through pop culture, and most notably probably for today's youth, or even today's 20-year-olds like us, you can see a lot of it in the Kingdom Hearts games, in different versions, Kingdom Hearts, Birth by Sleep, the regular Kingdom Hearts, Kingdom Hearts 2, there's just all kinds of, Kingdom Hearts Birth by Sleep will feature a world based on just this movie. Confirmed characters are Aurora, Malphitia, the Three Fairies, Prince Philip. So you get to see a lot of those characters show up in that video game.
Yes. Princess Aurora, Prince Philip, Flora, Fauna, and Meriwether were featured as guests in Disney's House of Mouse, and Maleficent was one of the villains in Mickey's House of Villains. Maleficent's goons appear in the Maroon cartoon studio lot in the film Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Woohoo! First all-new story featuring the characters from the movie appeared in Disney Princess Enchanted Tales Follow Your Dreams, the first volume of collection of the Disney princesses. It was September 4th, 2007. Various characters from the film also appear in the board game of the same name. There was actually theme parks. Sleeping cast member at Walt Disney... Oh, that's a caption for... Sleeping Beauty was made while Walt Disney was building Disneyland, hence 4-year production to time. To help promote the film, Imagineers named the park's icon Sleeping Beauty Castle. Oh, okay. Yeah, see, honestly, for me, I know that Disneyland out in California is the first park that he built, but Walt Disney World in Florida is the only one I recognize. an indoor walkthrough. Honestly, I really don't care about any of these damn parks.
You can see them in all kinds of different parks. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, pretty much. Going into the closing and final thoughts, what are your final thoughts on this?
Like I said before, I think you can sum it up for me like this. As far as the original fairy tale Disney movies, this is the best one because it's more enjoyable for the male audience. It might not be the favorite one for females out there. I don't know. I'd have to poll them. But even though it's the best out of the original fairy tales, I wouldn't put it up there. You know, I'm a guy. I like my Jungle Book. You know, I like some of the other later Disney movies better. But it was what it was at the time, and I think it's better than Snow White. I think it's better than Cinderella.
Yeah. I think we're almost probably going to agree on Snow White.
Oh, Jesus.
No. Since I just watched it before we are going to be recording that episode of Tooncast, I've got a few observations that are very just out there. So, overall, if you like fairy tale stories and you like Disney films, I would recommend this one. I would highly recommend, before it goes out of print and you have to end up paying over $50 for it, I would recommend you get the 50th anniversary Platinum 2-disc edition. It's got tons of bonus features on it. It's very cool. I'm looking at it right now. You know how a lot of these DVDs have that, it's not really lenticular packaging, but it's that slip case, it's the sleeve. This one, it's embossed. Like the castle is embossed, the dragon and the fire coming out of the dragon, the fairies are embossed on it, the title is embossed on it. It's just a very, very cool cover. I mean, you know, of course, most people don't buy DVDs just for the cover, obviously, but 2-disc editions are the way to go unless you're going to go blue, which Yeah, I have yet to go blue yet, but anyway, that's another story. So thank you for joining us here on TuneCast. There are several ways to get in contact with us to leave feedback for the show. First, you can visit www.geekcastradio.com and find all the other GCRN podcasts there. Second is you can stop by www.predaconempire.com/nexus. Those are our new forums. You can get all your GCRN Transformers discussion topics there. Uh-oh. There's Sylvester back again. Third is you can leave the show feedback on iTunes. The fourth is you can visit another great geek culture website, earth-2.net. You can find our threads on their forums under the self-promotion section. And the fifth is the email address, which is gcrntunecast@gmail.com. We now have a voicemail line. Call us and leave us your thoughts on each episode. Be sure to say which show you're leaving the message for and your name. Number is 502-526-5821. You can follow us on Twitter. The show name there is GCRNTuneCast. Mine is TFG1Mike. And what is your Twitter?
BossBOSSKDAWG.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of TuneCast and wish that you'll join us next time for the second... Oh, oops, that's not what that's supposed to say. The second installment of the Disney Animation Spotlight, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. For now, I am TFG and Mike with Kevin, Professor Bosque, Doug Thompson, saying the immortal words of Optimus Prime, transform and roll out, and thank you for listening. Until next time.
Thanksgiving is just 1 week away, and Christmas is right around the corner. Are you looking for a gift for family members and friends that is slightly not the average gift? Well, look no further. I am TFG and Mike from the Geekcast Radio Network, and besides podcasting, I am also a published author of poetry. I have 3 books of poetry published and 1 for sale right now. It is The Twists of Faith and Fate. This is an 85-page softcover book. It comes signed and only costs $20 per copy. I have 20 or more copies available. For more details, email me at tfg1podcast@gmail.com.
There once was a boy, an albino, I'm told, who possessed the power of pen pusher gold. He had many stories, all short and exciting, but nobody knew, and so he began writing. He sat there all summer and skillfully sought to perfectly ponder and polish each plot. The settings were set, all the characters cast, his fingers were flying and flailing so fast, and soon the young man with the snowy complexion quickly concocted the caffeine collection. He smiled, satisfied with his clever creation. Oh, the things that did pour from his imagination. Stories of pirates and future police, of devils and bullies, and a twist press release. Fantasy, mystery, both are included. Comedy, action, no genre excluded. You say to yourself, it's too good to be true, but author Steve Saylor would not lie to you. An audiobook so you don't have to read. And hey, $15 is all that you need.
From the author of the podcast novel, Black Shadow, Steve Saylor presents The Caffeine Collection, a dynamic audiobook collection of short stories presented by ringtonefeeder.com and stevesaylor.net. Steve presents a genre mashup of multiple stories for your ears.
I have to be on caffeine to write all this.
Steve Saylor presents The Caffeine Collection, on sale October 28th, 2009.
So mark this day down so you will not forget. For more information, stevesaylor.net.
Sword of Omens, give me sight beyond sight. I see a new episode of TuneCast coming this week.
Coming to selected theaters. A magical kiss that awakened a sleeping beauty.
Oh no!
Stand back, you fools!
Listen well. The princess shall indeed grow in grace and beauty.
Everything's so wonderful.
But...
when will I see you again?
Before the sun sets on her 16th birthday, she shall prick her finger and die!
I command you to
marry the girl I love.
Exactly!
A ray of hope there still may be. When cruel love's kiss, the spell shall break.
By Harry, I won't have it!
But I don't think she's really very happy.
Watch out,
Disney Pictures presents The Adventure. The Magic.
Too beautiful to be real.
And the Romance.
This is the happiest day of my life.
Of the most enchanting love story ever told. Walt Disney's classic, Sleeping Beauty.
Oh, I just love happy endings.